Welcome to Grief Walking Books Podcast 2. I'm Kendall Klim, your host, and today, February 4th, 2023, we are focusing on the poetry of Louise Morgan Runyon, a Southern Appalachian poet from Western North Carolina. I've known Louise for more than a decade and can say her talents as a writer, dancer, choreographer, healer, and political activist are as impressive and eclectic as the flora of the Great Smoky Mountains. Louise will be reading from her latest poetry collection, Where Is Our Prague Spring, published in 2022, as well as The Passion of Older Women, published in 2018. What I like most about Louise's poetry as it relates to our topic of grief is the fact that her writing transcends grief. Where Is Our Prague Spring addresses a most apropos kind of grief that people the world over face today. The loss of family, community, and cohesion, particularly as our environments, from personal to physical to political, undergo great change. As you'll hear in a moment, Louise assumes a highly personal, plain-spoken style that will encourage all who will listen and read to slow down, pay attention to your surroundings and the people who inhabit them. And in the most difficult of times, recognize the beauty in the human effort to connect. Welcome, Louise.
Thank you, Kendall. It's my pleasure to be here.
Welcome.
I'm actually going to begin with a poem from my previous book, The Passion of Older Women. This is a kind of a elegy for my cousin Frances, who died in 2017 at the age of 96. My cousin Frances. Sharp of mind till the very end, keen of eyesight, possessed of hearing, only slow of speech and eating, not slow of thinking or of caring. Frances, the mountain girl, who left her mountains for 50 years or so, for Washington, D.C., for New England, for South Carolina, who finally made it back to the 100-year-old cabin to play the dulcimer and the bowed psaltery and to weave. Who, with Sally, for 20 years was a mainstay at the Nona Weaver's cabin, who wove the complex traditional overshot patterns with ease, who wove fabric for an elegant suit for her daughter, who wove scarves and curtains and baby blankets and a bishop's stole in red and white. Frances wove everything, hand towels and dish towels, washcloths and bath mats, inserts for Christmas cards and bookmarks, my treasures. Frances wove her own shroud, which covered the box meant to contain her ashes, which she kept for years till she was ready. Frances, who, with her daughter and Sally, went galaxing every late fall, gathered the large round leathery leaves prized by florists into green bouquets and mailed them to my mother and me every Christmas, sending the scent of the mountains to our homes, the green bouquets which would last till spring. Frances, who gave me sanctuary, the many times I came to see my aunt, first cousin to Frances, at the nursing home nearby. Frances, who sang Amazing Grace in the Cherokee language at my aunt's memorial service at the tiny mountain church in the woods where I will one day be buried, amidst the mosses and the ferns. And from Where Is Our Prague Spring? I'm going to read a poem called The People of Penland, which is a kind of a cry for a lost world where everything was good in the world, as far as we knew, a lost source of love. The People of Penland. Penland School was begun by my great aunt Lucy Morgan in 1929 to preserve the traditional art of hand weaving in North Carolina. It has nurtured and provided sanctuary for every generation of our family, my mother's childhood. There was kind Mrs. Ellis, who ministered to my mother with buttermilk, cold from being set in the spring, my mother's own mother, so distant and distraught. And Cordy, who on Rabbit Hop Road sang the pure old ballads from her porch and taught them to my mother, Barbary Allen, 40 years before Joan Baez sang it. And the much-loved Doc Hoppus, who played banjo and fiddle at Hoot Owl Holler, where guests from Penland would come at night to listen, having first to traverse a narrow-gauge railroad trestle in the pitch dark, once with an engine parked on it, high above the rock-filled river. My own childhood. Bascom Annie, daughters Lucy May and Pearl, and their children, the Hoyle family, who lived next door to Heavens Above, where I stayed with my uncle and aunt in the summers. Bascom, who laid every path and built every wall at Penland out of her own native rock. Annie, who sat on her porch, snapping a bushel basket of beans all afternoon. The meals I shared with them, the sorghum I had never heard of, poured on everything. Pearl, dark-haired and dark-eyed, who did laundry. Lucy May, strawberry blonde with pale freckles, who did hair. Lucy May's daughter, Violet, whom I love so much that I named my New York kitten after her. Lucy May and Pearl, who along with my cousin Francis, were bobbin brats at the school when they were children. They wound new bobbins for the weavers at 2 cents a pop. Aunt Lucy herself, who built Penland out of love, of the mountains, of hand weaving, of mountain people, who built Penland during the Depression when there was no money at all. And Bonnie, Aunt Lucy's right hand, a daughter to Mrs. Willis, Penland's first weaver, large-boned in her plaid shirtwaist dresses, straight short hair, square-faced and square-jawed, cigarette always, dangling from her lips, always with a stick of doublemint gum for me. And Bonnie's sister Flossie, small-boned, with curly hair, mole above her left lip, with whom I spent a whole summer making prints of Queen Anne's lace and fern with printer's ink and glass. And Frank, somehow related, gay, I know that now, with slicked back blonde hair, a wide smile, who planted and tended the tall gladioli of many colors that lined the path between the loom house and the pines. Pearl. On my adult trips to Penland, I sought out Pearl, who worked in Penland's kitchen most of her life. Pearl in her 80s, presiding at a lone table, chopping green peppers, always green peppers, for Penland's sumptuous salad spread. Pearl, whose apron the blacksmith Elizabeth memorialized in iron and hung above the kitchen door. Pearl, with whom I silently mourned the old Penland, standing by her as she chopped. Pearl, who never wanted to stop working, her husband and son long dead, she silent and deaf. The young students from everywhere, singing boisterously and laughing, working fast. Pearl did the ordering for the kitchen, for years and years, expert from experience, then finally, just the peppers. One morning she didn't arrive. It had never happened before. Two students drove to her house, found her lying on the porch in January, alive but unable to rise. She had slipped on the ice of the porch, but Pearl came back to work a few years more. Jenny and Carol. I didn't know Carol was a man's name, but Jenny was a woman, Carol was the man. They were friends of my aunt's, we went to visit. They had trumpet vine. I picked its blossoms, stuck my small fingers inside their long blooms, showed off my long orange fingernails to Jenny and Carol. They gave us blueberries. I had never had them in New York. I showed Jenny my Jenny doll, 8 inches plastic with movable head and arms and legs and head, sets of clothes, my pride and joy. Well, it's got legs, ain't it? Said Jenny. At 8 years old, I answered in perfect imitation and all innocence. It's got legs, ain't it? Just my natural ear for language. My aunt was horrified, but Jenny didn't seem to notice a thing. Ever since I moved back to these mountains, I have longed and searched for the hits and haints, all educationed out. So much love in their hearts, Jenny and Carol. So much needed by me, the fatherless northern child. Penland, which cradled and held me, summer after summer. This poem is called Cherokee Scottish Festival. At the Cherokee Scottish Festival in Franklin, North Carolina, not far from the Quala boundary, which is still home to the Cherokee who escaped the Trail of Tears, my cousin and I stand at the table of Cherokee artisans, viewing the exquisite two-color baskets, the sleek carved panthers and bears, the roughly chiseled stone. From the crowd at the table, an elderly white gentleman in a crisp red tartan kilt with all the trimmings turns out of nowhere to say to my cousin and me, "In Silva, they are trying to tear down the Confederate monument of all things." And he proceeds to say this bad thing about the blacks and that bad thing about the blacks. "They should tear it down," I interrupt, throwing caution to the wind. "Who does he think we are, my cousin and me, tourists?" The racists here love to talk about being in these mountains 8 generations. That's as long as any white man could be. Our own family has been here 8 generations. We marched to tear down the statue in Silva for Lord's sake. We weren't raised to be racist. My ancestor, among the first Europeans in Franklin, dedicated land to a Cherokee chief to save him and his family from the Trail of Tears. But we are not innocent. The same ancestor owned slaves. Has promotion of Scottish heritage become code word for white supremacy? My cousin and I go and listen to the bagpipes before leaving the festival. I love the bagpipes. They remind me of my Scottish ancestry, McIntosh. The bagpipe band played traditional tunes, including Amazing Grace. Do these tartan-clad players know that song was written by a former slave ship captain who became an abolitionist? The week after the festival, the Franklin newspaper featured a centerfold spread of the Cherokee Scottish event. Full color photos of all the tartans and kilts, not one photo of a Cherokee artisan. Later, I go to get my car inspected at an auto repair shop I'd heard about, owned by a family of old-time musicians, good people, I'm told. I'm curious, are these the kind of people I grew up knowing here? Heart solid, kind, honest as the day is long, mountain folk. The young brothers working there are all pale-skinned, with ginger hair and reddish beards. They are incredibly nice, fast, and cheap. When I enter the gas station cafe to pay, there is no sign of music or old-time musicians, just a poster for a Christian singer who will appear soon in Franklin. The patrons, all older white men, look suspiciously at me in my pink mask. Not from around here, they must be thinking. Kendall, I think I should go to Prague Spring. It's already 20 after 5.
That sounds good.
Okay. And this is the title poem from the book, Where is Our Prague Spring?, which is available at my website, louiserunyonperformance.com. Where is Our Prague Spring? This was written at the height of the pandemic, and it's a cry of despair for the world. You'll hear. Where is the tango, the close embrace, so far gone now? Where is the waltz traveling in tandem, the Cajun two-step, its complicated wrapping of the arms around each other's waists? Where is the rolling around on the floor with other dancers, the taking of someone's full weight over my back, the lifting, the flying, the tumbling, the puppy pile of humans, that dance? Where is my 25-year marriage? When was the last time I was touched. Where are the faces, the mouths, the nose, the chins, except for my son's or someone's on the other side of the street? Gone, say their names. Where is the face between the mask, beneath the hat, the sunglasses, the face shield? I forget to look into anyone's eyes if they are wearing a mask. Whose face can I see now, except on the Zoom screen? And there is no eye contact there. Where is the holding of hands, the touching of cheeks, the common breath? Where is our Prague spring, our Duce, that flowering of art and government, of commonality and uniqueness that was so brutally crushed, but that happened? I was there on the other side in the Soviet Union in 1968. In those small hours of the morning before we flew out of Kiev, we heard Soviet planes all night long. What was that about? Arriving in Vienna, we found out people escaped from Czechoslovakia strapped to the undersides of rail cars. It would be 1989 before a new flowering there, the Velvet Revolution. Where is our Velvet Revolution, our Prague Spring, or as in Estonia, the Singing Revolution? Where is our Enlightenment, our Age of Science, our Renaissance, our Age of Reason, our Golden Era? In this strange age, I live in a fishbowl house of fog. On humid mornings, as mornings here almost all are, the bare trees of winter extend their black limbs through the silvery fogscape. On the rare dry mornings, the brown mountains can be seen as the sun rises, shedding light on the few remaining red leaves. The wild turkeys that cross my path, 11 of them moving so slowly, fully grown, their browns and reds and greens and maybe blues are muted in the woods. It is almost Thanksgiving Day. These 11 hopefully will survive. At any time of day, one may hear shooting in the woods. I have to ignore it. Oh, that.
All right. Thank you very much, Louise. That was a beautiful job. And I think that our listeners and viewers, depending on whether it's the podcast or viewing, I say Zoomcast. So I think that I'd like to just ask you a couple of questions and then we will be out of time. So can you tell us how your background in dance, and just for an aside here, I have danced for Louise's company. I know her as a dancer and choreographer, Feldenkrais healer and writer and political activist. So how does your background in dance serve as an impetus for creating poetry that encourages hope?
Well, to me, the body is one instrument. That includes the voice, that includes movement. And we're not just a poet or just a dancer or just an actor, but we use ourselves to express. And so for me, poetry is always a physical act. It's always heard, it's always spoken, it's always embodied. And that embodiment gives me a sense of hope because it's about commitment of one whole self.
Great.
Okay.
It's a wonderful answer. And finally, what can folks who are grieving get out of reading poetry?
Well, I think a sense of commonality. I think a sense of perspective. Within that commonality, going to a different plane that is shared and unique. Of not being alone. About being something, part of something greater than themselves.
That's a wonderful answer as well. And I think we are pretty much out of time. And again, can you go ahead and repeat the website where people can find your book?
Yeah, this is the latest book, The Passion of Older Women. The first poem was from a previous book. I'm sorry. Where is Our Prague Spring? The first poem was from a previous book, The Passion of Older Women. And all my books can be purchased on my website, louiserunyonperformance.com.
Okay.